Good morning. I would like to welcome everybody to this joint hearing of Education Finance and Education Policy. This is an informational hearing on Wednesday, June 24th, and I want to thank you all for attending. For the last few months, I've been talking and conducting informational hearings across the state with students, with parents, with teachers, with superintendents, with principals, with social workers, with school counselors, school nurses, nutrition folks, community ed, and runs the gamut of everyone that works with our kids in our schools, just to see how distance learning is going, wanting to check and see what the opportunities and challenges have been, what folks are looking at for summer school, and what they're thinking about with school starting in the fall. So what I wanted to do after all these conversations was to have a series of conversations that we could record and have in front of our committee members and the rest of the legislature to hear what you have to say. So today, what we have are groups of parents and students and folks that have been helping organizations that have been helping our students while they're distance learning, all coming together today to have this conversation. What we'll do is we each have, I believe we're each giving 2 minutes, or is it 5 minutes, Alyssa?
3 minutes per testifier, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You. 3 minutes per testifier. And we'll try to keep an eye on the time so that we can have everybody have a chance to talk. And please, if you're able to stay around, so if members have questions at the end, Chair Dabney will be moderating that section. So, folks, unless there's any questions, I'm going to check real quick to see if there's any member questions. Seeing none. With that, I'd like to get right to the testimony. And first up, we have Dr. Mai Mao, parent of the Hmong American Partnership. Dr. Mao, can you state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, my name is Mai Mua. Good morning, Chair Joachim, Chair Daphne, members of the committee and guests. Again, my name is Mai Mua, and I am representing HAP, Hmong American Partnership, a nonprofit social service organization that serves over 25,000 Hmong Southeast Asians and immigrants and refugees annually. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and share with you the community stories that have risen from the COVID-19 pandemic. I think it is best if I start with quotes from the students and families that we serve. One student shared, "I'm not motivated to do my work. When I'm confused about my homework, I can't reach out to a teacher like I normally would. I'm my brother and sister's teacher. My parents don't speak English, and I can't help them. I can't do my work and do theirs too. I miss seeing the janitor at the school. He always said hi to us. If distance learning continues, I'm going to quit my job. I don't care if I'm the main income earner. I'd rather go in public assistance than go through this again. The physical school environment is a critical place for building relationships. It's a place where children and youth learn how to socialize, communicate, develop their self-identity, and are connected to caring adults. Students miss working at their desks. They miss walking in the hallways, talking with their peers and teachers, and even eating school lunches. Now they take their Zoom calls in their beds, on their floors, or on a small table crowded by other siblings in other Zoom calls. Assignments are half completed in the middle of the night after gaming, YouTube, and Netflix binges. For many of the families who are homeless and are experiencing violence in their homes, schools and school teachers and staff provide a psychological and physical safety net. What we know is that a one-size-fits-all education system does not fit all. The power and privilege dynamic clearly brings to the surface the inequities that exist in our educational system. And for the students and families who have the luxury of time and knowledge to navigate around these systems, they come ahead. And for those who don't, they fall further behind. We now see that our educational systems are not as student-centered and family-centered as we originally thought. We are in the 21st century, and yet we apply the centuries-old values of what teaching and education should look like for distance learning in a global pandemic. We've kept our robot-like education system and all its policies and rules and moved it online. This new normal is our creative moment. Albert Einstein once said, "No problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it." Collectively, our questions need to be different. And to do that, we need to dial up our curiosity and operate from a place of authentic listening. We need to recognize that creativity is just as important, if not more, than school subjects and classes. It would be a mistake to think that directing financial resources would sufficiently resolve the problem. What is needed now to overcome this educational collapse is more than financial resources. It takes understanding that the act of learning is not separate from the rest of life, and that students and families learn best when they are co-creators of their educational journeys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mua. I'm so happy to have everybody's voices at the table right now, because we definitely need to hear your story and every student's story as well. And of course, I've been reminded by Ms. Fritz, I'm a little out of practice at doing this. I want to have Mr. Peterson list off all the folks that are in the room right now and at our table, and then have Chair Dabney give a brief welcoming statement as well. So Mr. Peterson.
Thanks, Chair Joachim. I think I have everybody here, but if I missed somebody, please let me know. But I have Chair Joachim and Chair Dabney here, Vice Chair Kunish Pudin from the Ed Policy Committee. We have Representative Erickson, the lead for the Ed Policy, and Representative Carisha for the lead of the Finance Committee. We also have Representative Baker, Representative Bennett, Representative Christensen, Representative Daniels, Representative Damuth, Representative Edelson, Representative Grunhagen, Representative Herr, Representative Jordan, Representative Juergens, Representative Katiza Watoon, Representative Pryor, Representative Richardson, Representative Sandel, Representative Scott, Representative Erdahl, and Representative Wazowick, and Vice Chair Sandsted, Representative Marquardt, and Representative Murphy could not be with us this morning, but they send their regards. And I think that's everybody I have so far.
Members using the blue hand, was there anybody that we missed? Seeing no hands going up, Chair Dabney, would you like to give a brief welcome?
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you for your leadership on putting together this series of informational and informal hearings that we're going to be holding over the next few days, looking at students' and families' experiences of distance learning, as well as teachers and administrators and school boards. We had an educational system that was turned all upside down a few months ago by a virus, and we're now trying to assess what impact that has had, what differential impact that has had across the state and across students and families. And I'm looking forward to hearing the different voices. Ms. Mua, thank you for kicking us off, but hearing the different voices today and over the next few hearings. So, Chair Joachim, thank you for pulling these hearings together. Thank you to the staff for the considerable work that's been involved on their end, as well as to members and members of the community. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Next up, we have Brian Eddie Hernandez-Chavero. Do you want to introduce yourself and proceed?
Oh, okay. So good morning, Chris and the community members. So thank you for the opportunity to share my experience at distance learning. My name is Brian Eddie Hernandez-Chavero, and I'm a student at Bloomington Public School, Valley View Middle School. I recently completed my 8th grade, my middle school year, and I'm going to 9th grade now, so I'm going to Kennedy High School. So I'm going to start with it. I like to start focusing on the overall working and assignments during the distance learning period. First, there was a generally more assignments given than on normal school days. This meant I was working off for hours and into night to make sure I was able to stay on track while on assignment. I went behind my homework and everything. My homework was packing up and everything. My grades were falling down, so I couldn't do anything. Teachers didn't reach out to me. I had to reach out for them and check and see what was going, if I was doing real good with my homework, if I was going wrong with it. And like, they didn't answer back until like probably like 3 days later on. So then second one is that my classmates and I had to do a group so me and them could do our assignments, they complete them together, try to communicate with each other, try to see what was going good and everything, the assignment, and some of the challenges that I had My first one is that I had COVID-19. And although I had COVID-19, I did keep track with my homework. I tried to put it in all my effort, even if I wasn't doing well. I had to do it. I had to complete my assignments, go on Google Meet, on Zoom, and video. And then my other one is that I'm the oldest brother, so I had to help my youngest brother do his homework, explain instructions. I had to do everything like for him, like giving him samples, helping my mom, taking out the trash, babysitting my brothers, with technology too, with my other brother. Like school, I had to help him with his Chromebook. I had to help my brother because some of the teachers didn't respond as fast as they had to. Some of the teachers replied, but some of them didn't really reply as soon. And as I remember, mentality, some of my friends and I really had to come together to make sure we were understanding what we were supporting to be doing, how it got done. And to end, I would like again to thank all of my opportunity and the work you are doing. Thank you.
I want to thank you so much, Mr. Chavera, for being here today. Your voice at the table is probably the most important one we'll hear today. I hope you can stick around for some questions.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you. Next up, we have Bree Porter from Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage.
Hi, I'm Bree Porter. I'm with the Concerns Parents Group of Anubam. I'm chair of the literacy committee. So we advocate for children in the St. Paul School District. I have two children of my own, two seventh graders. And I would like to talk about the distant learning and some of the challenges that we have as far as like the lack of internet connection. It's been difficult during the pandemic far as the technical part, not having enough hotspots for each student in different households, not being able to have enough tablets and things like that so that the children reach their our biggest concern was around the distance learning and not being able to have like full conferences with the teachers, face-to-face interaction. That's very challenging. And also, I feel like it's important for the teachers to be able to interact with students, not just
Ms. Porter, yes. We really want to hear what you're saying, but your bandwidth is breaking up a little bit. Could you maybe turn off the video so maybe it'll be a little bit clearer? And go ahead and start over again.
Can you hear me now?
Much better. Thank you so much.
Okay. Excuse me. Okay. So, I was pretty much saying that our concerns was like the lack of access, to the internet, not enough hotspots to go around. Technology across the board, every student in a household does not have their own device. Sometimes it's too many assignments per subject, and sometimes the translation can get mixed up in a household doing homeschool environments, and also too many login assignments for a class session that can be difficult for young students as well. That's logging into three or four or more classes, 30 to 60 minutes each. I feel like it's not enough flexibility in changing the learning environment for the students at home to engage. I feel like it should be it is different and it's kind of difficult for the students. Sometimes also it's no guidance on the flexibility and the standards, far as like the pressure from the administrations and the district, far as the educators, to ensure that the students are assisted right with this. I also work with parents, and sometimes a lot of parents are stretched thin. They need more IT support, a different online platform, plus ensuring that children can be academically challenged. Also, we need something to support the behaviors of learning in this challenging time as parents. I feel like sometimes it's hard too for, and it's a concern for the attendance for the students, far as like logging in online to class sessions. Also, I feel like that social emotional well-being can be limited. We also need, like, some people and some families and students need therapists and counseling during the pandemic with the social distancing and the learning, because it's a different setting. You know, it's not like a school setting. It's more of like a home setting. I feel like the well-being in the home environment is important, but it can be also challenging. And also, there's traumas, you know, at this time during a pandemic, and students and educators are being neglected, I feel like, in, you know, some sense that the students are not being, they're not being positively affected. And so those are some of my concerns as well. Like I said, I'm with the concerned parents. I advocate. I have 2 7th graders, my son and my daughter. And last year was different for us, you know, being at school and on strike. And then also the pandemic hit. So we're just, you know, even with me talking with the superintendent, because I am a concerned parent and I work with the literacy committee, I also spoke with the director of literacy for the St. Paul school districts. And I feel like we need more recommendations, and we need more of the structured plan implemented, far as, you know, getting our kids to engage more with the distant learning. I feel like it's highly recommended for me to mention that we need more video conferencing. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Porter. You very well laid out what I'm hearing from parents around the state and a lot of the concerns, especially with access to technology and the access for direct one-on-one synchronous learning as well. So thank you for being here. Next up, go ahead, Ms. Porter.
Well, I would say it's a pleasure with the concerned parents, and we're happy to have a voice and to be able to share the inequities that we feel about distant learning.
Thank you, Ms. Porter. Next up, we've got Amber Hansen, who is also a parent.
Hi, my name is Amber Cristina Hansen. Thank you for having me today. I have 2 children. One is going into 6th grade this year, and another is going into 8th grade this year at a public charter school. I also have had the privilege to work as part of the Parent Association at our schools and with other Latinx leaders on education through Latino Lead. Have the privilege of working with parents and other leaders in the districts and charter schools across the state. I'm here today because I wanted to share some of the things my kids' school did right to show that it is possible for distance learning to work, and also to highlight some of the problematic ways in which the lack of clear direction and expectation and accountability has failed our kids. So I'll start by saying that on Sunday, March 15th, after the governor announced that schools would be closed, that children would not be returning, and that there was going to be 2 weeks before they would start distance learning. My kids got to hear from their teachers by the following Tuesday. So by March 17th, 2 days later, both of my kids' teachers had called us, had checked in with us as parents, and had also talked to our kids directly. I share this because it struck me to understand how important this was for my kids when I saw that they had a sign of relief, physical relief, in their faces when they heard their teachers' voices and understood that their teachers were going to have a plan for them for the rest of the time and that things were going to be okay. That was really, really critical. And it was really concerning to me that so many kids across our state were not hearing anything at all from any of the schools for 2 weeks after this started. Teachers continued to connect with our kids over the course of the 2 weeks and were helping them onboard. They were doing assessments to understand which kids in our school, which is 98% of kids, by the way, in our schools are on free and reduced lunch, to understand the needs of kids and assess technology so that they could try to close these gaps as soon as possible. So while at our kids' school, there were about 200 students that did not have access to internet or laptops for about 3 weeks. We were hearing from other friends and colleagues and family members that had their kids without any access to technology still in May and June. And this is really not okay. To be clear, I just want to state that my kids have a lot of privilege, but by virtue of their experiences with their friends and my involvement in the Parent Association and my own personal experiences as a mom, I have been very concerned about the lack of equity, transparency, and transparency from our schools that is a result of the lack of expectation and direction coming from policies and legislations and the Minnesota Department of Education. It was clear that there had been no expectation to engage families as a result of this work. We saw that ELL students did not have the same access to direct communication from teachers. And because of that, there was a lack of understanding of how parents were able to really be able to engage their students at home and hold their students accountable to work. They didn't understand what that was. I saw that there was a lot of direct communication with students specifically, but not engaging families in communication of what the expectations for students were. Because of the lack of technology, I also saw a lot of isolation, and this has contributed to the impact on mental health for our students. My kids have had the privilege of having access to laptops and access to a phone, but their friends did not have that access, and so they couldn't communicate with each other, and that further isolated them from each other during the school year, which has contributed to a lot of depression and mental health trauma. Because there was no guidance from teachers for teachers on expectation to talk to families to provide them with support on learning, parents felt left out and guessing. I saw this firsthand when I had to call up teachers directly. I had two different experiences, I should say. I had a teacher that was very proactive in engaging me by texting me every time they texted my kids to share with them the expectations of what was to be done in a school week or if schoolwork didn't get done, to check in to see how everything was going with me directly, and another teacher that actually did not engage with me at all. So I had no idea what was happening in my kids' learning and how to best support them. At the end of the semester, we had parent-teacher conferences, and my kids' teachers shared with me that they had a pass-fail grade system in place. But they didn't actually tell me what that meant. So there was no transparency in terms of me understanding, were my kids at grade level? were, what did I have to do as a parent? There was no guidance of what should I be doing as a parent to make up for some of this during the school, during the summer time. There was no kind of transparency on what this actually meant for our families. I share this because I truly believe, as somebody who's on a parent association with really engaged families from the Latinx and Black communities in particular, that we are all incredibly interested and committed to our kids' education. But there is some kind of belief gap in the ability for us to be able to actually support our kids at home, and therefore no transparency in communication or partnership, true partnership with us as parents when we're the ones who are having to do the homeschooling right now. And I attribute that directly from the lack of direction and accountability, again, from the top down. If our school districts and our charter schools have clear direction on how to best support our English language learners, our children that receive special education, and families, and to engage families in general as partners, we would have had some better results. And this is something that is, by the way, prior to COVID, but it's been exacerbated because of the pandemic. So this is why I'm here today, is to really request and plea that we get better access to technology and better accountability for our school districts and charter schools to engage families, to have clear expectations to and be transparent in terms of what they're sharing with our families and with our kids.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. I'm sorry, we're bumping up against that timing. I want to make sure everybody remembers to stay within the 3 minutes. Did Ms. Hansen, did you want to give a quick wrap-up sentence?
I think I really just summed it up there. We just need more direction and accountability to our districts and charters. And accountability is key. We need more supports for our English language learners and more access to technology and more direction on parent communication so that we are working in partnership with teachers and not being isolated and marginalized from what's happening with what in kind of instruction they're giving our kids online.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hansen. I think you made some very important highlights there, especially with connecting with the students right away. That one-to-one from the teachers is so hugely important and making sure parents are part of the plan. So thank you so very much. And next we have Shika Kumar. She's a Minnesota Youth Council member. Could you please state your name for the record, because I probably pronounced it completely wrong, and then proceed.
No problem. So my name is Shika Kumar. Good morning, Chairman Dabney and Chairman Yukim, House members and guests. Thank you for allowing me to provide my insight on distance learning and how it has impacted students during this pandemic. I'm a rising senior at Mayo High School in Rochester, Minnesota, and a Congressional District 1 representative on the Minnesota Youth Council. First of all, I would like to preface my notes by saying that I understand that these past few months have been highly unexpected, and therefore it cannot have been expected for a fine-tuned system to have been presented to students. Furthermore, I have tremendous respect for my teachers and other educational and administrative staff who are placed in a highly unique and demanding situation as well. When I first learned of distance learning being implemented all across Minnesota, it came to my attention that the initial order from Governor Walz required for no instruction to occur. In the Rochester Public Schools District, students were notified that this initial period of no instruction was time for teachers to convert their lesson plans online and prepare to have effective classes using distance learning. However, when my peers and I began online instruction, I was shocked at the lack of organization demonstrated by my school and school district in whole. There was no set instruction or times for those instructions for classes, no required office hours from teachers, and overall, there was a lack of structure. Half of my classes had no onboarding or plans or expected learning plans for distance learning given to me or other students before instruction began. This meant that some classes began having increased workloads, while others seem to drop off the grid. To further illustrate this disorganization, I would like to add a couple of details from my distance learning experiences. The majority of my classes did not have any instruction or recorded live lectures, but rather material was just pushed out on a weekly basis. And the some teachers that did offer office hours, there was a lack of coordination between staff, and I often found that they were scheduled at the same time. This resulted in me often having to pick one class over the other, sacrificing the classes I had about new material. One of the most difficult situations during distance learning for me was in classes that did not provide teacher interaction. For example, in a semester-long class, my peers and I had no opportunities to watch lectures or attend video calls on the materials we were supposed to learn. The new learning method was starkly different from the class's typical daily lectures, as we were now handed vague weekly presentations, despite having a national testing in May. Lastly, when we look at the experiences of students all across Minnesota during distance learning, I believe it is imperative to not only look at it from one student's experience, such as mine, but rather from the ranging experiences of many of my peers. The lack of uniformity across my classes not only impacted my learning, but the learning of many others. For example, I've heard from my peers that those watching multiple younger siblings during the day felt the absence of structure to make learning frustrating, as they never had consistent times to dedicate to school while providing childcare. In other situations, students with essential jobs and limited broadband access struggled to create concrete learning patterns when they did not have a steady plan coming from their teachers and school administration. As I end my perspective on distance learning, I would like to stress that if the use of distance learning is repeated, whether this fall or later in the future, we need to find a proper order to teaching, just as we do when we're physically in school, to ensure the continuation of a proper public education. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kumar. Hearing from students really helps us, and you're echoing some of the statements Mr. Shuaro made too, that the lack of the uniformity and consistency is really tough, and not having that direct contact with your teachers. So thank you so very much. Next up we'll have, and I hope you can stick around for questions as well. Next up we'll have Marva Lynn Schellenberger. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. It's going to take me a minute to get this so I can read my statement. My name is Marva Lynn Schellenberger. I am a parent in the St. Paul Public Schools District. I have an incoming senior who's at Highland Park High School in the Spanish Immersion Program. When distance learning, okay, technology is not my friend, so bear with me. When distance learning began, my family faced many challenges. One of the biggest challenges was access to reliable internet and the lack of finances to afford a better connection. Let me take a moment and explain what I mean by internet access. The speed, the reliability, and the amount available to use in the house. I have Internet Essentials, which is an affordable program through the government for low-income families. However, it is not reliable, it is not fast, and it is limited. So if I use it for work, my son uses it for school, or he plays video games, there may not be enough for an online chat or for an online meeting like this. We cannot run our television. We cannot watch movies. It is limited. Okay. If I need the... sorry, I've already said that. Then there is a problem with the platforms, which I haven't heard many people talk about, but Google Meets has been a problem, cutting people off, dropping. The problem that we faced here in this group with it cutting out on the first speaker, it crashes. They're overloaded with the increase of students and teachers using the system. And sometimes the platforms that the schools have chosen are hard to use or understand, especially if you're not tech savvy, which I'm not. Reliable and affordable internet should be available to all families, no matter their income or where they live. And it is not fair that my student did not have all he needed to engage in distance learning, but other students in other districts did. And if you can financially afford unlimited high-speed internet, your children did better than those who were on the government program. Distance learning also brought challenges of reliable supports for my son. I, like many other parents, had to work and could not provide the supports and supervision my son needed to make sure that he was doing his work. I could not access his schedule through Schoology and keep him accountable for his daily work. And when I did reach out to teachers, it took days to get a response, and the question often lost its relevancy when I did hear back. As a student with a learning disability, distance learning added another level of difficulty. My son struggles with his disability until he struggled with his disability his first 2 years in high school until we got an amazing IEP written and we got him on the right meds for his attention deficit. His grades went from D's and N's to literally A's and B's. He was able to jump his grade point average from 1.4 to a 2.47 in one quarter because of the IEP and the meds. He had A's and B's at the beginning of March, and he lost those grades. Then we went into distance learning, and his IEP was set aside for the most part. We signed an addendum that basically said nothing. Teachers were not making modifications to his assignments, and when they did, they were very vague about what would count. For instance, his math class, he had N's in the assignments, but he had A's in all the tests. So were they going to take his assignments as the grade, his tests as the grade, or a combination of both? Completely vague and no idea what was going on until the very end. Then my son experienced depression, feeling worthless, convinced that third and fourth quarter grades were going to ruin his chances to get into college. He was not able to take the ACT test, and no adult can tell these students 100% that they won't need the test to get into college and that colleges won't take these quarters grades and hold them against them. My son needed more structure and someone present to help him stay focused and answer questions as they came up. Without this, his lack of motivation in daily assignments, he had a lack of motivation with daily assignments and tests. In our district, daily attendance were assignments were not linked to classwork. The students saw them as unneeded busy work, and therefore the students did not do them. And I received calls every day saying my son was not in attendance at school. When he did try to engage, there were ongoing internet issues, which included our internet and the platform capabilities. He had multiple classes scheduling conflicts, meaning classes scheduled. He had 3 1-day all scheduled at 3 o'clock. And in his school district, they are not even in school at 3 o'clock on a normal day. All of this combined limited his ability to fully engage in his classwork. Mario, my son, enjoys and relies on the interaction of others to support his learning. So sitting at home by himself was like solitary confinement. Distance learning may have been a different experience for Mario had he had access to reliable internet, a set schedule, more interaction with students and teachers, hands-on lessons, a tutor, an aide available to answer questions and to keep him focused and on track. Students also needed supports like a study hall to get more help outside of group instruction and consistent tech support.
Thank you so much, Ms. Schallenberger. Sorry, we're at the 5-minute mark and I want to give other folks some chances. You bring up some really good points, not just about the digital divide, but the extra supports our students need, especially if they have IEPs in schools and the utilization maybe of paras with that distance learning. So thank you so much. If there's any added comments you want, we're going to take some written testimony as well. Next up, we have Ms. Emmy Mestel. She's a parent as well, and through Pacer Center. Ms. Mestel, will you state your name for the record and proceed?
Good morning. My name is Emmy Mestel. Chair Dovny, Chair Joachim, and the members of the committee, good morning. As I stated, my name is Emmy Mestel, and I am the mother of two energetic boys, Charlie, age 15, just finishing his freshman year in high school, and Will, age 12, a sixth grader. I'd like to share with you my experience during distance learning this past spring. Like many families, I have two different learners at home. Charlie, my ninth grader, has Down syndrome and receives special education services through an individual education plan or IEP. So these comments are perfect after the last speaker. My son Will is typically developing and taking classes at his grade level. In both cases, distance learning was very challenging. We've worked very hard with our district to provide an inclusive education for our son Charlie. Although he receives replacement math, reading, and writing curriculum, the rest of his day while in school is typically spent with his peers. He enjoys PE, theater, and if you ask him, he'll tell you his favorite class is U.S. government. We believe this inclusive model will not only lead to better academic outcomes for him, but also increase his self-reliance skills and his ability to be independent later in life. But along comes distance learning. The first 2 weeks were extremely challenging for all involved, parents, students, teachers, administrators. Both my husband and I were trying to work full-time from home, and just to keep our kids on track was another full-time job. For my son, Charlie, the only way for us to make it through was for one of us to sit with him for the entire school day. On his own, he would not have been able to manage his assignments, respond to dozens of emails, or absorb the lessons and complete his work. It's very difficult to personalize learning in this environment. Curriculum was not being modified. It was up to us to make it meaningful for him. I will say it got better as we went, but I do worry that my son's skills went backward in many areas. I worry he did not make progress on his IEP goals. They were not followed. I worry that he lost some of the skills needed to regulate himself in the classroom and be independent in school. But as much as I'm concerned about him losing academic progress, one of the hardest parts to see is the social isolation he experienced. Much of his social framework is made up of seeing his peers in theater, in class, in the school. He didn't have people calling or texting him, maybe like other teenagers might. He told me in no uncertain terms, "Mom, I hate distance learning. I miss my teachers and my friends." I will also add that I don't believe our situation is unique in the stress that it put on us. In fact, I spent the past school year chairing my school district's Special Education Advisory Council. And in our spring meetings, which were held virtually, we discussed as parents and shared with our district leadership how disruptive and stressful it was being a parent of a kid with disability and trying to manage distance learning. It became clear to me that the students with the higher learning needs were impacted in a greater way. There was a collective feeling of being overwhelmed, knowing our kids couldn't possibly have the proper supports learning from home to meet their unique learning needs. So, although I do not wish to repeat distance learning again, I know that going back to school in the midst of a global pandemic presents its own risks. I am counting on the healthcare professionals and school leaders to figure out a way that learning can look differently this fall, all done in the safest possible manner. I truly hope additional effort can be applied to figure out ways to serve our most vulnerable students, which to me includes our students with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Nestel, for sharing your personal story. I think we're hearing that a lot from students across the state and parents about the social isolation and the need to have some more supports for kids that need a little bit higher learning support. So thank you so much. Next up, we have Sandra Samuels, the president and CEO of the Northside Achievement Zone. Ms. Samuels, could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes. Hi, Sandra Samuels. And Rep, I'm going to go on video because I know I get choppy too sometimes. And tell me if I'm choppy and then I might call in, but I'll be quick. So good morning, everybody. Chair Joachim and Chair Daphne and committee members, thank you so much for doing this and hearing from the people that is most important to hear from, parents and students. So again, Sandra Samuels, I'm president and CEO of the Northside Achievement Zone. And I have, you know, like 30 partners, and we do full wraparound with parents and then also work with the students and schools. But I'm also here on behalf of the Education Partnership Coalition. And our coalition is very similar to what we're doing on the ground in North Minneapolis. These are partners in Greater Minnesota and in St. Paul who are doing the same kind of on the ground work, understanding that schools can't do it alone. So they too are wrapping support around parents and working with early childhood providers in schools. And the organizations, and I know many of you are familiar with them, but so us, NAS, St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, Austin Aspires, Every Hand joined in Red Wing, Generation Next, Twin Cities, Northfield Promise, United Way of Central Minnesota, and Rochester as well. Rochester's is cradle to career. So all of us on the ground, really connected to parents, but also connected to the schools where their students are attending. And everybody really said what's happening. What I would just add quickly is we are in a healthcare tsunami. With the pandemic, we're in an economic tsunami. So many of my parents are frontline workers, have lost their jobs, don't know how they're going to pay rent. And of course, we have an academic tsunami. So, you know, I've been focused on the kids who are the furthest behind in terms of our achievement gap. And as we talk right now today, that achievement gap is swelling exponentially for all the reasons that we talked about right here. And so the emergency is so, and I know you all know, to talk about distance learning, you know, schools aren't, everything that happens to kids impacts their learning, right? That's the intersectionality of the not having stable housing, not having food, parents not having jobs, you know, and so on. But right now, it is so critical as you all think about returning back to school. And also as we continue with really it's homeschooling, especially for our youngest scholars, with support from schools. I mean, that's really, and I think Emmy just really highlighted that when she talked about her son. We had one of our moms that many of you, like Chair Joachim, and I think Chair Dabney, you absolutely met one of our moms, Salima Shabazz, four kids, public school and public district and public charter schools. She's been up there, testified several times. She talked 3 weeks ago or right before George Floyd's murder about the stresses of the homeschooling, you know, worried about paying rent, worried about her health. She had asthma. Many of the moms that I've talked to, too many disproportionately African-American have asthma. But anyway, 3 days before George Floyd was murdered, Salima died of an acute asthma attack. And I know that had everything to do with the layers of stressors. But anyway, here are the things that it'd be great if you all focused on, and I know that we're focused on. So with both the homeschooling, with support from schools, the mental health is so critical right now. With the trauma, the murders, there have been 116 people shot in the city since George Floyd's death. Here in North Minneapolis, we've had students shot. We've had my staff's son got shot twice. It's been the trauma. Like, I'm traumatized. I can't even imagine the kids who are experiencing all of this right now. And then we're worried about education too, right? So right now there are mental health organizations like Washburn Children's Center, the Family Partnership, who, because of telehealth, can lean into significantly more families. And they are like, they're taking our families on. And so however you all can get that kind of support for the scholars would be like, I mean, it's critical. Tutors. If our kids were already behind, they're going to get even farther behind. We're working with Reading Corps as well as Reading Partners, and even looking at private business to help support private tutors for the kids who need it most. So we have to make sure that learning loss is caught up, and also working with the business community. So you all probably have heard already that Best Buy is really thinking through access, both technology and access across the state. And so you all, I know, have a relationship with business, but really leaning into them around what more they can do, and they're planning on doing more. And lastly, what I would just say is, you know, I just think this is the perfect time. And by the way, for this summer, our summer school partners are doing a combination of in person and online. And one of the struggles, or what they're trying to balance, is how do we help kids regain some of what they may have lost academically, and also deal with the social and emotional aspects of the crises that is happening right now in terms of unprecedented violence. I've been living in North Minneapolis for 23 years. I've raised three daughters here. I have never, ever experienced this level of violence. And it's disconcerting. So thank you so much. But the partnering with business, the telehealth, because social emotional is so critical, and everything everybody said is really on point. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Samuels. And thank you for just exactly naming that intersectionality and the issues, the trauma some of our students are facing, all the work we need to do to catch kids up in the fall. And I want to thank you and the other organizations that have really stepped up. I cannot even imagine where kids would be without the help of your organizations trying to fill in the holes and pick up the pieces. So thank you so very much. Next up, we have Matt Norris, who's the Policy Director of Minnesota After School Advanced Youth Prize. Would you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Joachim, Chair Davney, and members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris. I'm the Policy Director and Director of Minnesota After School Advanced at Youth Prize. Youth Prize is a statewide organization with a mission focused on increasing equity with and for Minnesota's Indigenous, low-income, and racially diverse youth. I come before you this morning to share a little bit about how Youth Prize is using the K-12 education tax credit as a tool for equity and to urge you to increase the woefully outdated income limit for this credit to help respond to the needs of Minnesota families related to distance learning. The K-12 education tax credit covers 75% of the cost of academic enrichment activities as well as computer hardware for educational purposes. The problem, though, is that the income limit of $33,500, regardless of household size, to qualify for the maximum credit has not changed since 1997. This has caused tens of thousands of Minnesota families in need to lose eligibility. Our proposal, House File 578, which the House Education Policy Committee passed last year, would benchmark eligibility to the income levels to qualify for free and reduced price lunch. Despite this decades-old eligibility limit, Youth Prize's Minnesota After School Advance program has been using this tax credit to get Chromebooks and laptops to low-income families for distance learning. To date, we've received applications from 131 different cities across the state and shipped devices to over 370 families. We've literally had to start buying Chromebooks by the pallet. I've included a map in the written testimony I provided that shows the geographic diversity of the cities we've received requests from. It's also important to note that BIPOC students represent 67% of our applicants. However, simply ensuring that every student has a device will not solve the inequities that are inherent in distance learning. For instance, a recent report found that students may experience only 50% of typical learning gains because of distance learning. And just this morning, I read a report from McKinsey & Company that found that the typical student will lose about 7 months of learning because of distance learning. And of course, they found that those rates are even higher for Latino and Black students. Now, some families can afford to pay for academic enrichment, like tutoring, that's required to make up for these losses, but many cannot. That's why Youth Prize is now helping families use this tax credit to pay for online and, where safe, in-person tutoring and other academic enrichment activities this summer to help make up for the academic learning loss. Seeing all these students benefiting from the tax credit only makes the emails and the calls that I receive from families that are over the income limit but still desperately in need more heartbreaking. Like a single father from up on the range who's trying to raise his single daughter on his own after losing his wife to breast cancer. He's drawing on SSA survivor benefits and his 401k just to make ends meet, but he still doesn't qualify for this tax credit. Or one from a single mother with four dependents who, with her less than $50,000 salary, is trying to get by but just doesn't have it in the budget to pay full price for a Chromebook right now. Updating the income limit for this tax credit would be like flipping a switch. The Department of Revenue estimates that over 50,000 Minnesota families would benefit this year alone. This idea has bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate, and the Senate has included it in their tax bill. Now, I know the House majority is not in favor of a large tax bill, but this is one narrow provision that has the bipartisan support to become law and begin helping more low-income students immediately. I've been really concerned by a lot of the testimony I've heard today, and this is only a snapshot of what I'm hearing from students and parents all across our state. Minnesota's low-income learners are already behind because of last school year, and they cannot risk a repeat in 2020-2021. We need, and Minnesotans expect, the parties to come together and rally behind equitable solutions like this one. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Norris, and thank you so much for the relationship with Youth Prize and what you're doing for all the children in our communities. Next up is Stephanie Proper. She's a parent with a group called Reopen Minnesota Schools.
Thank you, committee chairs Joachim, Debbie, and members of the committees. Thank you for my testimony. My name is Stephanie Proper, and I represent Reopen Minnesota Schools, a statewide organization and grassroots organization dedicated to getting our schools fully and normally opened in the fall. We are made up of thousands of members across the state. I'm going to take a little different tactic from a lot of my colleagues here today. Our attempts and ideas are to get the schools opened in the fall and not to continue distance learning. I could sit here and drone on about statistics about COVID and how it doesn't affect kids, that kids are not super spreaders and they don't transfer. It's not transferred by surfaces. But y'all know all of this, and so I won't waste my time reciting statistics, which are available in article after article. But I will use my time to make a suggestion. I would ask that we try to flatten the fear in our society. Much of Minnesota's COVID planning was based on flattening a curve. Well, ICU beds are available, and we're looking at nowhere near the 80,000 fatalities we thought in March. So we flattened the curve. I would ask that now that we've done that, we should flatten our fear in society and start with our children. And how do we do this? Well, recent notices from the Minnesota Department of Health and Education usually state that the decisions that are being made are on behalf of the children's health and safety. Well, are they? Let's wordplay this and change that to instill and teach fear in some hypothetical announcements and a few editorial comments. Children will be required to wear masks and sit 6 feet apart in an effort to instill and teach fear in especially a new kindergartner this fall who won't be able to see his teacher smile when he reads a word successfully the first time. School lunchrooms will be closed to instill and teach fear, especially for a child who doesn't know where their next meal is going to come from. A hybrid model of distance learning will be used to instill and teach fear in our community so that a single parent will not know how she's going to pay for her childcare because her children go to school 3 days a week and she has to work 5. Or full distance learning will be in place in the fall, instilling and teaching fear in a socially isolated teenager, so much so that her anxiety bubbles over and she decides to kill herself. I think y'all get my point. By enacting full distance learning, the hybrid model, or even asking children to undertake ridiculous precautions such as single directional walking hallways, you are placing excessive fears on them. We are raising our children to be scared and anxious and afraid of demons that do not affect them and will not kill them. Distance learning overall was not a success, and through our members, we have thousands and thousands of different accounts of exactly why it was not a success and why our schools need to be open. I will mention one statistic that children only learned about 60% of what they would have learned if they had stayed in a classroom this spring. At this point, I can absolutely guarantee only one thing that Minnesota children will learn if they do not have a normal school this fall, and that is to be afraid. They will learn to be afraid that those in charge may not be doing the best thing for them. They will learn to be afraid of something that will not kill them. They will learn to be afraid of the future and the unknown, and they will learn they cannot take risks. So please be the educators and the executives and the officials that y'all should be and flatten the fear in society. Bring our children back. Open our schools without masks or distancing, start our activities from sports to theater to robotics. The curve in Minnesota is flattened, and now we need to flatten the fear in our society for the health and safety of our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Proper, for having your voice at the table and echoing how important it is for our kids to have that personal connection. I think COVID's made us all realize how important our schools are in the economic engine and our children's health care, children's health around the state. And what a difficult decision it's going to be with Department of Health and Department of Education to try to thread that needle to make sure that we also are listening to all the science that's out there. So next we have Ms. Rachel Coleman from Parent and from the PTA Board of Directors.
All right, thank you. My name is Rachel Coleman, and on behalf of the Minnesota Parent Teacher Association, I would like to thank you for having me today. I'm a parent of two boys, ages 8 and 10, that attend a Title I school in the Roseville Area School District. My husband and I both work full-time and are incredibly fortunate to have very flexible employers. Even with this flexibility, trying to fit in distance learning plus all of my work tasks meant I was working 10 plus hours per day and not feeling I'd completed either very well. This was exhausting. My 10-year-old Alex's class had a daily morning meeting and then a clear set of PowerPoint slides that laid out all of the assignments for the day with links to the appropriate lessons. This allowed for a very consistent experience, and it was easy to know what was required. It also allowed us to develop a predictable routine. In addition, if he didn't complete his work for the day, I received a message from his teacher. This accountability was also extremely important for his success. In addition to his mainstream classwork, Alex is on the autism spectrum and has an IEP for special education services. Excuse me. These services were difficult to replicate in a distance learning environment and required substantial coordination and oversight on my part. In addition, I was basically his paraprofessional for all of his distance learning. He was expected to do all of his classroom work and then also assignments for reading, speech, adaptive FIED, and social skills class. I couldn't keep up and ended up declining many of the special education services. My children had vastly different distance learning experiences. My 8-year-old Julian had no live meetings, which made it hard for him to connect with school. His teacher had small children at home to take care of, so I completely understand why she wasn't able to hold live meetings. His assignments often required many different apps and websites, which were at times confusing and overwhelming. Julian missed his classmates, became sad, and refused to do his assignments. This illustrated for me the importance of having a significant social component to distance learning. I'm extremely grateful and appreciative of the hard work of the teachers and staff. We asked them to complete an impossible task, and they rose to the challenge. Looking forward to fall, I think collaboration with families will be of paramount importance. Our teachers and school staff are highly trained in the developmental and educational needs of our students, and in my experience, they carefully choose lessons for very specific research-based reasons. Parents don't necessarily have this knowledge. I know I don't. As a parent at a Title I school, the main concern I have regarding distance learning going into the fall is widening the gap in educational equity. Students don't all have access to the same technology, quiet spaces at home, and parental support. When you bring in factors surrounding aptitude, learning style, special needs, and language barriers, the gap becomes even more significant. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Coleman. You really brought that well together for us to remember the connections that the kids really need and that social component that we have in our schools. I have 5 teachers in our family everywhere. We have early childhood, elementary, middle school, high school, and special ed. And the inconsistency across some districts, I think, with that connection with the kids has been tough. That's something we definitely have to look at when it comes to what we're going to be doing in the future if we have to go back to distance learning at any given point. So members, I'm going to hand the virtual gavel over to Chair Dabney, who will be moderating the question section. Chair Dabney.
Chair Yuking, thank you. And thank you again for your leadership in bringing this together. Thank you to all the testifiers for your perspectives and sharing those with committee members. Members, we are now at the point of questions. I will ask you to use the raise hand function in Zoom to help facilitate an orderly process. The hearing at this point is scheduled to go until 11:15. House Public Affairs has allowed us to go till 11:30 if we need. But I do also want to be respectful of members' time and our scheduled end time. So are there members with questions? Why don't I kick it off? Ms. Samuels, you spoke of the additional supports you're bringing in for students, especially around literacy. The information that I've seen nationally has raised particular concerns around math skills being lost during this distance learning period. And I'm wondering what the education partnership groups are doing around numeracy skills and math skills.
Yeah, Representative Dabney, that's a great question. I'll need to find that out for you, because I know what they're doing around literacy, and I don't specifically around numeracy. So I'll find out and get back to you. And it would be a combination of our schools and after school and also in school partners. And I know they do some math core work as well, but I don't know to what degree. So that's a great question. I'll circle back with you.
Thank you very much. I just find it's very easy for all of us to love having a little kid on our lap and read him a book, and that's great and that's important. But the numeracy skills, the math skills are equally important. And it's a little harder to hug the kid while they're learning their multiplication tables or something. It's just not as enticing, but as important. Thank you. Representative Sandell, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I have a group of high school and college students who are part of our campaign and an advisor through the session. And we had a meeting on Monday night, and we asked them about their anxiety or their interest in getting back to school. There are a real variety of kids. And all of them, with the exception of a student who was at a small independent school, all of them were anxious about their own health, about the possibilities of social distancing in school, or about bringing a virus home to older people who live in their family. I'm a former teacher, and I have always supported the excitement of a classroom learning, and I'd love to have students back in a classroom. But how are we going to protect public health and balance it with our interest in having children back in the classroom? I know that's a difficult question, but I'm eager to hear anyone's answer or suggestion.
Anyone wish to take a shot at that?
Well, I know what
Ms. Samuels?
Oh, yes, thank you. Sorry, Chair Dabney. Representative Dabney, I know what I've been hearing from our partners is, and school partners, public district schools, is a staggering of the school week where a certain number of kids come one day, like they might have a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule, and vice versa. So that's one. And I know this summer with our partners who are actually having physical summer programming, they're spacing them out in terms of different floors. They're using more than one building, different floors. So trying to maintain the physical distancing requirements.
Ms. Hansen.
Hi, thank you, Chair Dabney. I actually had just written about this in the chat as a possibility, Representative Sandel. I think that there is the staggering opportunity. The reality is that we also have many families that have to be working, and it is really challenging to leave your child at home to do online learning if your child is in third grade or second grade and they don't have any other caregivers. So one suggestion also is to have early childhood all the way through fifth grade prioritized as being in school 5 days a week. and being spread out across multiple buildings so that they might be using the middle school and high school buildings to have the necessary distance to be able to be in on campuses and allow for families to be going back to work. And then have middle school and high school children do distance learning or some kind of hybrid model because they can do some, oftentimes, a better job of doing some self-regulation and disciplined kind of online learning. With the exception, of course, of students that might have an IEP that might need some greater support, students that might be greatly impacted by the opportunity gaps, and English language learners. So ensuring that there might be some more robust support so that we continue to close gaps for students and provide the necessary supports for families that might have more challenge there. So that is one recommendation that I've heard from educators out there that is a proposal. Staggering it across the board provides a lot of challenges for all parents with kids that are younger.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Representative Pryor, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. So I would like to hear a little bit more from the students that we had testify today, because enjoyed or really benefited from hearing what your experiences were. And one thing that I would like you, if you could address a little bit, we know that there is, different generations think about technology differently, and that perhaps the teachers and the administrators and all those people that try to put together these distant learning plans, I wonder, do you see opportunities for improving how that was done? Based on the technology that you might be using on a daily basis, were some of those things, do you think that they really, is there opportunities to do it better in the future? And if I can kind of give as an example, I know in medicine, we've been using telehealth, and that's probably something that will continue on even after we, are beyond the other side of this pandemic. In terms of your education, do you see now maybe some opportunities for a better use of technology based on your experiences?
If any of the students want to wave their hand or something to indicate, all right, Ms. Kumar, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Daphne, Representative Pryor. Yes, I definitely think that there is room for improvement when it comes to technology and education. And I do have to say that I think my teachers did take advantage of technology in a good way throughout distance learning for the most part. But I think that a lot of the interactive learning wasn't really there during distance learning. And I think that a way that, for example, technology could be utilized in a better way would be to be able to have discussions or online live lectures through Google Hangouts or Google Meets, because it's very different to get material pushed out via Google Doc or an email and be like, hey, read these pages in your textbook, do this work, versus having a teacher actually across the screen from you trying to explain things to you and having that live communication where you can ask them questions as you're thinking them in your head. So I just guess that's one example of how technology could be utilized in a better way in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Kumar. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members. Ms. Proper, real quickly, your comments are interesting to listen to, and I come from a healthcare side of things, so I'm going to probably look at this more. And I just have a couple of questions about, let's say we agree, and I'm not saying we do, on this does not affect children the same way it affects adults, but we do have a high-risk population of staff, and the schools will not run without the staff. And so what do you propose for that? I mean, I get that we have to – I don't believe that we've put fear into them. I believe fear is earned, right? It's basically the way we react, and people become fearful of what we do as far as mask and staying inside. But I think there's a perception out there to say that if we open up the state tomorrow, and the state's pretty much open, that everything is going to go back to normal. We see it in our towns and communities right now that people just are not going to go out and eat, and they're not going to go out and do the same things they did before. Our world is definitely different. Believe it or not, it's people are not comfortable with that. But I think we're still going to have trouble with staff. Staff is going to be concerned. I worked in an ER, and we know that people carry things, right? They bring it in, stuff like that. So kind of help me understand. I mean, I'm with you. Boy, oh boy, I got a junior in high school, and I want the schools to open right away. We had a lot of fun time together this year. But the point is that I'm with you, but kind of help me out with the staff portion of this.
Of course.
Ms. Proper?
Of course. Thank you very much. In terms of that question, I can say that overall, teachers are actually not significantly older. As we know, COVID generally affects people who are over the age of 65. It does affect younger people. There are a few people here in Minnesota, I believe in their 30s, who died, I think two. However, the average age of a teacher is usually between 40 to 45 years of age. So you're already looking at a population that is not going to be severely affected by the disease as it is. The older members, I would understand if they did want to wear a mask to feel safer, they certainly could. But I'm saying that children should not have to wear a mask simply because there are so many points of view that you actually get masks that say it doesn't actually protect you against the virus. These are masks that are simply something that are trying to help make sure that droplets do not get spread. Well, children are not going to leave their masks alone. So if the teachers want to wear their masks, I think that would be okay, but I don't think that the children should be. And additionally, I don't really think that we should put the fear of spreading upon the children. I think if there is an immunocompromised person in their house, or in a situation they needed to, it needs to be those adults in charge that are responsible. You know, I don't want to put the idea that a child who is 7 years old cannot go to school because somebody in their household is immunocompromised. I think it's that person, they're the adults in that household's responsibility to make sure that they go ahead and have the child wash their hands, change their clothes, make appropriate necessary changes. And I don't think that the overall majority of the schools should be affected in that way. I think the schools as a majority should be able to do it. And then adding on to that, we have members who are from far western Minnesota. I know of one specific member who told me that in her entire school district between K and 12, she has 380 students in her school. That is not the same as a regular suburban area out here where there may be more than 3,000 people in just the high school alone. You cannot take a sledgehammer approach of keeping schools closed or providing only, saying, distance learning when schools that only have 380 people and may be very capable of providing distances that the CDC thinks that we need, can do it. I think each school district has to have a certain amount of understanding of what they think they can go ahead and do in that regard. Also, there needs to be some accountability within the areas that they are actually located in. But overall, I understand that, you know, the fear of the staff, but the staff themselves would be able to take precautions if they wanted. And I don't think that would be a fear amongst the major in the population itself, just because they're probably not going to be of that age that is going to get negatively affected by this disease.
Okay,
Representative Hewitt, follow up.
Sorry, well, real quick follow up here, Dabney. Basically, to state that that's our average age teacher, I would like to see data on that. And secondly, we're also involving. We're all talking about the death rate. The death rate has nothing to do with what we're discussing here. If somebody gets sick from COVID with an underlying, and there's a lot of underlying diagnoses in our schools, the bus drivers, stuff like that, these people are out of service for a good month to 2 months. We keep focusing on what our death rate is, and Minnesota's done a great job bringing that down. We got great healthcare workers. But the truth is, when someone gets this, they're gonna be out down for quite a while. And so it takes out all that. We go back to H1N1, and that affected our schools. We could have the same situation. So I want to tell you that I hear you, and I think our committee hears you, but we need, this is just a muddy waters, right? So thank you, Chair Dabney. I'll rest on that.
Thank you. Chair Joachim, you had a question.
Why don't you go ahead and let Representative Herr go first, and then I'll do a follow-up.
Oh, certainly. Representative Herr? And while she's getting teed up, I should recognize that Representative Nornes has joined us. Thank you for that. Representative Herr.
Chair Daphne, thank you for the conversation today. Thank you and Chair Joachim both for pulling this together. I just wanted to say that I appreciate all of the testimony today. I appreciate hearing the struggles that parents have been going through. And I want to just say that, you know, I agree with everything that has happened today, but I want to really address the fact that that what existed before, how our children of color and children from marginalized communities were treated prior to COVID-19, emphasizing that it only got exacerbated. And I know this because my own child, who is a 16-year-old in public schools, experienced an enormous amount of issues with online distance learning, and she has a great deal of privilege. She is a mom who is extremely connected to the system, who understands how the system works, who is talking with decision makers every day, and we struggled. And I know that there were teachers that were really probably did a great job at this, but my experience showed me that many, many teachers were not prepared. And I don't even know, and I don't want to say this in a negative way, but I don't even feel like some of these teachers bothered to be prepared. Because my child was already invisible in this system. When we went to online, my child became even more invisible. And that teachers who were supposed to be preparing were not prepared when we went back online. Teachers who should have had time within their own class schedules were scheduling times to meet with students in other teachers' class time. And yet nobody was monitoring this. And when everyone tried to put this back on me saying, well, you could be checking these things online. And I said, I have. And there was always excuses for why. The first 2 weeks was because, well, they were focusing on specific things about getting children up and going, so they didn't put things online. Well, I was checking, so nothing was happening. Then the following 2 weeks, when I realized nobody was doing this anymore, I started looking at each individual classroom and started asking about homework assignments. And then teachers always had excuses for why something happened the way it did. And yet no one ever wanted to just solve the problem. And what I just had to keep doing was working around why a teacher was ill-prepared to actually teach online. I know that there are teachers who do a great job, and this is not to disparage other teachers, but this is to really focus on the fact that, like, we are continuing to put Band-Aids on this distance learning and what we're trying to do when the systemic issues around racism and around classism and around issues around children from marginalized communities, children from low-income communities, that those things we continue to not fix, which is why we will continue to have problems in any kind of situation that we're trying to Band-Aid. And I am extremely frustrated at this situation. I'm extremely frustrated at what I am seeing. And, like, we need to figure out how we're going to have the will to fix this, not just what's happening now with distance learning, but what is wrong within our education system that continually creates systems in which children from these marginalized communities have an increased gap in that distance, in that learning and that achievement. And I just couldn't let us go through this without having to say that even someone with as much privilege as I have, the enormous amount of work that I had to, and then I had to actually establish a 504 plan, which I didn't even know existed, because teachers refused to work with my child unless I got a 504, which is absolutely crappy, especially when teachers will send me emails to say, I don't have any responsibility to have to work with your child because she does not have a 504. That is unacceptable. And so when people think that I'm just some Hmong mom who doesn't know anything, nobody wants to work with me. And so nobody should have to have a position of authority or have official power to make decisions in order for people within a system to say, I hear you and I will work with you. Our system is broken and we need to figure out how to fix this, because we cannot continue to keep doing this and we cannot go back to the old normal. So that means that we need to have a will to fix this right now. And then we need to have a will to go back and say, how do we fix the entire system that creates this system that we're in right here as well? And so that's all I wanted to say today. I have so many more things about my experience and having to stay on top of teachers, which ended up being a full-time job for me, in addition to a legislative session in which I was literally working 14-hour days. Unacceptable. And so I would, as we continue to work through this, more of my experiences will come out. But I think that today was really important to hear that I was not alone. And even as somebody who has as much access as I did, I needed to hear all of the other parents today to assure me that I was not crazy, because the system was telling me I was failing as a parent. The system was telling my child was failing as a student. And I know now that that is not true. And so I just needed to share this with all of you as well. And I thank all the parents and all the people and all the students who spoke today about your experience and what you were seeing, that your experience was real and I'm there with you. And I felt the exact same thing and went through the exact same things. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I want to thank Representative Herr for grounding us in the fact that distance learning has exacerbated the opportunity gap. We cannot get away from that, and we cannot go back to the old ways either. And I want to reflect back on what Dr. Moa said at the very beginning, that this is our new moment for creativity and trying to figure out how we make sure that we have all students, give them what they need to learn and figure out a way to make this a better system than what we had before COVID. With that, I also wanted to ask the students that we have here, Mr. Chavero and Ms. Kumar. I know you, Ms. Kumar, you did mention having that more synchronous learning environment, more face-to-face contact with teachers. But if there's anything else between each of you, if you want to pick one thing you think that we need to do better when it comes to learning either in person or if we have to go to a hybrid or a distance learning model, I know it's hard to pick one thing, but just would like to hear your voices.
Mr. Chavero or Ms. Kumar? Ms. Kumar.
I can go first. Chairman Dabney and Chairman Youakim, thank you. So first of all, I think one thing, I guess, like if we're talking about in-person learning, I think that I just have to echo the statements that have been previously made about the inequities that we currently have in our Minnesota educational system. On the Minnesota Youth Council, we have heavily discussed this as a group, talking about how we as a state and our educational system truly fails so many people of color. And it's really disappointing to see that Minnesota's education system is regarded as one of the best in the country, but at the same time, we have one of the worst achievement gaps in the entire U.S. And so I think that we really need to recognize how we decide to treat our students in our educational system and realize that a one type of approach does not fit all students. We need to make sure that we're not just placing money or placing support in one area across the board and expect it to work for every single student. And we need to realize that there are so many inequities across our entire educational system, and that we need to personalize the way that we treat students and teach them. So I know that's kind of like a vague answer to your question, but I think that to all the representatives, I think that I would like you to know that youth my age and in the school system right now recognize that this system that we have right now is completely inequitable. And we really recognize that students of color are being left behind in the system. So I know that there's a lot of work to do, whether it's divesting from property taxes for our educational system, and implementing more teachers of color in our workforce to make sure that we have representation for students. But overall, just please recognize the inequities in our system and try to work forward on that.
Thank you, Ms. Kumar. Mr. Chavero, do you have more you wish to add? Putting you on the spot here. I'm sorry if that's uncomfortable.
No, that's fine. I agree with it, but like, I feel like teachers should pay attention much so if they help them more with homework and like try to explain stuff with students. And I think they should like teachers help and reach out to families and see if everything's going to go with them at home with their homework and everything with the grade. Also, I think that parents should go to school and like check up on the teachers, seeing if like what work they're doing, if they're doing good work. And yeah, that's what I think for me.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chavero. Chair Youakim, a follow-up?
I just want to thank both of you. And early on in May, I'd met with the Minnesota Youth Council to find out how distance learning was going. And I think maybe we're going to have another meeting and try to get some more voices of students across the state. Maybe we can do that soon. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Youakim. Representative Kunesh Padin, our last questioner.
So this is not so much a question as a comment, and I want to thank all of you for sharing your very unique viewpoints here today. We all come to this place through different life experiences and different lenses. I myself, when I'm not a legislator, am a library media specialist. So all that technology that kids have had to use, Schoology, Google Hangout, Zoom, all of those things, the online audiobooks, the online this, the online that, those are the things that I have had to work with for years and years and create and prepare for my students and the staff to use. I do want to make sure that we are recognizing the fact that there is a digital divide. Not every student, not every family has that kind of access to technology or internet, a high-speed internet, and that's definitely something that we have at the legislature discussed on and on with very little action, especially in greater Minnesota, where their access to the internet is even more limited than many other places. And so that's really something that I feel that we as a legislature really need to make sure that we are addressing. But I see what goes on behind the scenes at a school. Those first 2 weeks where we had to take that break for the schools to work hard, to scramble, to figure out some kind of a distance learning plan, that was all new to them. That was all new to the districts. That was all new to the families. There were many students that left the school and didn't have their laptop with them. We had to figure out how to get that to them. And in the district that I'm in my school, we have over 900 students. That means that one teacher might be responsible for 300 students online learning, which is almost impossible to do, to give that kind of individual attention. And it absolutely is important that they have the opportunity to create that one-to-one relationship with their students online. And we all summer long, we are doing professional development, how to, you know, deal with one scenario over the other scenario or the other scenario as we start in the fall. But it's going to take a lot more than one teacher to meet the needs of the families and the students. And as a legislature, I think it's really important that we look at how we are, again, funding our students in an equitable way. And some of the comments that have been made today have been extremely valuable to me as I look to ways to support my school when we go back in the fall, but also parents as I hear from them, and of course our legislature. And I really appreciate all the hard work, all the sentiment of everybody here. And to those students who are working so hard, I just want to say thank you so much for participating in this way and for advocating for our students as well.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Members and members of the public and to the testifiers, thank you all for taking the time today to hear these different perspectives and different voices. It's certainly driven home to me that in education, we found ourselves in a very different world, and now we need to figure out how to do it better and demonstrate that we in the education system can learn and apply with a focus towards making sure that students and families are at the center of the work we do. It certainly has lifted up the even greater importance of families and parents in distance learning than in a conventional setting, because more of the responsibility for the education does fall on parents, regardless of the experience and the efforts of the teachers and other education professionals who are engaging the students. And that internet access is critical and means different things in different areas of the state and different communities. That while we talk about distance learning in 2020, what parents expect is online opportunities. With that, members, I would remind you of the hearing again tomorrow, another informal informational hearing. That one will focus on the voices of teachers, counselors, social workers, school nurses, transportation operators, and early education professionals. Again, at 9:45 tomorrow, members of the public are welcome to tune in on the House TV system and would be welcome to continue this conversation then. With that, members, thank you all. Thank you to the public, and we are adjourned.